You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. Whoa, oh, oh, oh.
The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One. It's 17 to 10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Right, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. Their odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to The Punt Podcast here at William Hill. Alex Dunn in the presenter's chair because Dave Kellner is on an Alp somewhere. Is it an Alp? Actually, I don't think it is. He's gone to Austria. He's skiing anyway. And he keeps sending me lovely photos of him and his family having a really nice time while I'm here doing all of his work. But that's fine. Don't worry about it, listeners. I'm certainly not. We've got a cup final to look forward to on the punt this week. The League Cup final coming up on Sunday at 4:30. Arsenal against Man City. More on that later on what is a fantastic Sunday of action, both in the Premier League and the Cup. I'm Alex Dunn. This is Andy XL. Hi, Andy.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. All good.
Closest I get to an Alp is a Toblerone.
And Mr. McGovern?
Yes, how are you doing? Yes, I used to be, actually, I didn't tell you, I used to be a ski instructor.
Is this true or is this a joke?
Yeah, no, I used to teach people how to eat yoghurt very succinctly.
I thought we were going to get it going downhill rapidly.
That also applies, don't worry. Right, let's waste no time, dive straight into the action, because we've got five televised games to look forward to this week. We start with Leicester-Stoke on Saturday lunchtime. Leicester is 7-10, the draw is 11-4, and Stoke are 19-5. Here's a stat for you. Wilfred Ndidi is now the player who's had the most shots in the Premier League this season without scoring a goal. That accolade was with Jordan Ibe, but he notched a few weeks ago, and then Matt Ritchie, who got one last week. So it appears that when these players actually come to prominence and someone points out that they haven't scored for ages, they actually go on to score. Indeed, he 34 shots without a goal. Might be pushing it to think he can score this week, though. But Leicester, I will start with you here, Derek. I wouldn't say stagnated, but they certainly haven't been as resurgent as they were in Claude Puel's first few games in charge. That said, they're up against the Stoke side, who are going to have to scrap and battle away for every single point to the end of the season.
Yeah, well, this is a match of the two most charismatic managers in football. Not. Jesus, if you see two people and one of them looks bored, the chances are the other is Paul Lambert. Because, gee, I mean, how could he couldn't inspire you, could he, if he was your manager? I looked at this match earlier on and I thought Stoke's price was big. And then I took a closer look at and realised just how bad they are, particularly away from home. And they concede almost three a game on the road. Even shipped two against Bournemouth recently. Leicester have kept six clean sheets in the last 10. I've said that they're the best team in the Premier League outside the top six, and they probably will finish seventh, and they'll win this game as well. 19-5 Stoke. I can understand why people might think, well, that's a bit big. They're only playing Leicester, but they ain't going to be winning this. Leicester are far too good to them.
Stoke have also got a pretty poor record against Leicester full stop, actually. But in the Premier League, they have gone five without beating Leicester. Though they did win here at the start of 2015. But I'm sort of in agreement with Derek there. It's a tempting price, but if you'd have been tempted by Stoke many times this season, you'd be pretty skint.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about Stoke needing to battle for every point, well, they haven't shown it so far. They're one of those teams that they're almost like they think they're too good to be down there, but they are. Like you say, the last five fixtures in the Premier League, Leicester have won three with two draws. The last two at Leicester were 3-0 and 2-0 wins. Mm. And I think Leicester minus one is like 2-1. So to me, that's where I'd be looking. By the way, Wilfred Ndidi, I think he has scored in one of these games recently against Stoke. It might not be this season. So, and if his nickname isn't Yes, that's disappointing. So he might be worth looking at in the goalscorer market, but I think Leicester minus one is a good bet.
Look at that. I didn't even do my research properly. He did score in this game last year, so the research is correct, but I could have followed it up with an even better stat, yeah.
Yeah, you could.
If you fancy the same to happen again, I'll find out what price he is, shall I? Ndidi anytime is 5-1, so it's not going to knock your socks off, but there you are.
It's not the worst one you've seen.
No, definitely not. So best bet for you then, Andy, minus a goal?
Yeah.
And for you, Derek?
Leicester 7-10, it's fair enough, isn't it? You know, it's backable.
Okay. Next up is the Saturday tea time game, Watford against Everton. Watford 13-10, the draw 11-5. Everton are also 11-5. Got another fun stat for you here. Romelu Lukaku scored 25 Premier League goals for Everton last season, that is. But Umar Niasse's 7 goals for Everton this season have only managed to get the Toffees 2 less points in terms of when he's been scoring them. He does score goals at crucial times in games, normally off the bench, it has to be said. But you just look at Watford's injury list coming into this. Andy, it's a good team that's injured.
Yeah, I mean, them and Palace are struggling really badly with injuries at the moment. The stat I'd trot out for Watford is in the last 6 Premier League games, they've scored 1 goal. In the last 6 home games, they've scored 13.
Mm.
So that tells you what their plan of action is, and they're at home here, so they'll be trying to rack up a few goals. Everton normally concede, but they've started scoring as well. So I think Watford to win and both teams to score looks all right to me. It's around 17-5, because I just don't think Everton are all that.
No,
they've got not a lot to play for, and Watford are still scrapping, and they will be scrapping at home. So I think Watford and both teams to score.
Last few meetings between the two, there have been goals as well. Everton winning 3-2 earlier this season. Watford winning 3-2 last season. How do you see it going, Derek?
I don't see it going like that this season. Definitely not. Not with these two managers involved. I tell you what, if there's any bets for what match would be on last on Match of the Day, this would be it. You know, providing they actually did bother to show it, because I think it's going to be an absolute stinker.
I was going to say that it's a bold shout when you've got West Brom, Huddersfield, Burnley, Southampton, and Brighton, well, Swansea on the same day.
Yeah, I know. I was about to say Brighton and Swansea are on as well. You know, so if you're after that game, it is a stinker, and that's what you'll get. I'm tempted by a 0-0 draw, but I don't even think there'll be that many goals. Allardyce will love going there and getting a 0-0 because that's his MO. And this new manager at Watford, we know he's not going to be a purist, is he? He's not going to be playing free-flowing football. He's already admitted that. And what we've seen from Watford, that 4-1 defeat of Chelsea apart, suggests that's what we'll be getting from them the rest of the season. They're a difficult side to call, Watford, I've found this season, in common with the other 19 in the Premier League. But I'm going to go for the draw at 11-5.
Draw 11-5, the 0-0 draw is 17-2. As well, if you want to get stuck into that. And enhanced odds on Deeney to score, Watford to win, push out from 14-5 to 7-2. And the aforementioned Niasse to score and Everton to win from 9-2 out to 6-1. And of course, that is a hashtag your odds game as well. As, of course, is the lunchtime kickoff. As is Palace Spurs coming up on Sunday. This is a noon kickoff, an early start on Sunday. Palace are 11-2, the draw 16-5. Tottenham are 2s on in this one. Harry Kane, what can we say that hasn't been said about him already, Derek? 13 goals in 12 Premier League games in February. And he's been on fire so far this month, this time around as well. That said, 2s on Tottenham looks a little skinny here. Palace are pretty good at home.
Well, you know what? You look at the league table and their home record overall, and it isn't that great at home. But that's only because at the beginning of the season, they were losing to everyone at Selhurst Park, Huddersfield and Southampton and teams like that. More recently, they've had some, you know, they've beaten Burnley out there, they've beaten Watford, they've beaten Stoke, they drew with Man City, remember? A game they should have won. So, you know, yeah, you're right. Their home record has definitely sharpened up recently. And Tottenham at 1-2, I mean, I know they're getting talked about now as potential Champions League winners after that performance against Juventus the other week. I fancy Palace actually still to go down, because without Zaha, and he is key to them, and they are with Roy Hodgson, and those two facts makes them a side that's, you know, in deep peril. But something about 11-2, I'm almost fancying it, because I just think it's a bit too big. I don't know what to do. This is troubling me, this fixture. What I'll do is play safe and go for Palace with a goal start, because I just want to, when I see Tottenham at 1-2, I want to be against it.
Yeah, I'm in full agreement with you there. I mean, I quite like Palace at home. Palace plus a goal is 8-5. Palace plus two goals, 8-15. If you have it in some kind of acca, isn't the worst price either, I'd suggest. Particularly because Tottenham have drawn the last five away from home now, Andy, in all competitions against, well, Southampton, Newport, Liverpool, Juventus and Rochdale. That is a real mix of teams.
Yeah, that's an eclectic list. I'm actually getting into the worrying territory of agreeing with Derek McGovern and yourself here. Mm. And with the plus one, I think might be all right. There's an element of Tottenham getting above themselves. They haven't won a trophy yet, and the one they're looking at is the Champions League. Try winning something else first.
Arsenal, man.
Well, do you know what? I've said this to one or two Tottenham fans as a right wind-up, but I think it's true. They are Arsenal of like 8-10 years ago.
Mm.
They're moving ground. They're trying. Can't win a trophy.
What does that make Arsenal then?
Well, that's a whole different discussion, isn't it? Somebody asked me where my Arsenal mug was the other day. I said somewhat appropriately, it's got a crack in the side of it, so it's sat on the mantelpiece. I think, and coming back to this game, I think Palace plus with a goal start is all right here.
Yeah, 8-5 certainly seems a very fair price for Palace, but we shall see. What about Man United Chelsea then? This one's 2:05 on Sunday, 6-5 for the Red Devils. The draw 23-10. Chelsea are also 23-10. Plenty of your odds markets as ever available on this one. Enhanced odds as well. Lukaku to score, Man U to win, pushed out from 5-2 to 100-30. Or Eden Hazard to score and Chelsea to win, pushed out from 9-2 to 6-1. Both sides coming here off the back of draws in midweek in the Champions League. Should Chelsea be as big as 23-10 here? Do you want to back Man U at 6-5, Andy?
No, and I'll tell you why. The last 13 meetings between these two teams, one win for United.
Mm.
1-13, 5 draws and 7 wins for Chelsea. So who do you want to be with?
But could that be because Mourinho was in charge of Chelsea for a lot of those games?
Well, some of them, but nevertheless.
Yeah.
And also, what do you want? A team before a Champions League game or after a Champions League game? I'd rather be with Chelsea here on all counts.
Okay.
So I think that's all right. I think that's a pretty good offer at 23-10 there. I quite like that. I'm not being a United fan all season. I've not been a Chelsea fan because I've said I think they're looking at Champions League and World Cup, all of their players. That's the problem at Chelsea, actually. And the manager's looking elsewhere as well, anything rather than the Premier League. But this game is a game they're going to want to win.
Yeah.
And I think 23-10 is all right.
Team news, of course, Derek, will be very interesting because Man U shuffled the pack a bit in midweek. It'll be interesting to see if Paul Pogba comes back into the side. And for Chelsea, they seem to have signed Giroud and he's immediately gone onto the pile with Morata in terms of, Conte doesn't really like him. Hazard, Pedro, William with the front three against Barca. He could stick with those. He could chop it up again. It'll be interesting to see come, 1:05, exactly what the managers are planning on doing here.
Oh, more interested in seeing what happens between the managers, because what's going on behind the scenes with these two, they absolutely despise each other. Will there be a handshake? Well, probably only one of the hands is around the other's throat, I think. They hate each other, and I'd like to see some odds. Sometimes you get odds from maybe Hills will come up with it. You know, will the managers shake hands? I don't think they will. There's no love lost at all. And not many games lost when you're Chelsea either against Man U, as Andy said. The myth of Mourinho has been exposed this season, big time. He's Sam Allardyce with O-levels to me, Mourinho. And I, if you were a Man United fan, you must be in despair. Paul Pogba, he's a sensational player, but he's doing a fair impression of a player with absolutely zero confidence right now. More worryingly for United, Romelu Lukaku is doing an even fairer impression of Romelu Lukaku. They're going nowhere right now. And I think that Chelsea, the performance I saw from Chelsea against Barca in midweek, I've had my doubts about them. I know Andy has as well. What's going on behind the scenes here? The players aren't interested. The manager doesn't seem interested. That was a sensational performance, that. And even to this untutored eye, they're a miles better team when they've got Pedro, Willian and Hazard in tandem rather than one of the big yard dog centre-forwards. And if he goes with those three against United, they will win.
OK. Interesting that Lukaku, I think he's played 6 times against the big clubs, in inverted commas. so far this season. No goals and only 4 shots on target in those 6 games.
Yeah, he is the traditional playground bully. He'll pick on the little kids, but you can't do it against the bigger kids. The other thing, just to pick up on Mourinho comment there from Derek, Mourinho is Sam Allardyce with better players. And like you said, that's exactly the same point that Derek's making. I agree with that. He plays the same type of brand, but he's just got better players to do it.
Mm.
So, you know, like I say, on this game, in this circumstance, where Chelsea's motivation's been the issue for me all season, and there won't be a problem here.
Okay. So best bet for you?
Yep, Chelsea. Just Chelsea win.
Okay. Derek?
Yep, Chelsea win.
There you go. 23-10 on Chelsea away at Man U on Sunday. And the cup final is the final feature game we're going to focus on. Arsenal against Manchester City in the final of the Carabao Cup. Now, 90 minutes betting sees Arsenal at 9-2, the draw 16-5, and Man City 8-13. To lift the trophy, Arsenal are 2-1, Man City are 4-11. Plenty of your odds markets as ever available there. Enhanced odds as well. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang to score and Arsenal to win in 90 minutes, pushed out from 6s to 8s. Kevin De Bruyne to score, Man City to win in 90 minutes, pushed out from 12-5 to 3-1. Derek, there's nothing not to like about Man City, apart from Monday night when they lost to Wigan. But
yeah,
surely if you can forgive them that and just say, look, that's a one-off, the 8-13 is not going to blow you away here, but they should have far too much, surely.
Well, yeah, you'd think so. And I thought that when they played them in the FA Cup semi-final, was it last season? I thought I couldn't see how they could possibly lose, and they did. Was it last season or the season before? I can't remember now. They should win, shouldn't they? But that Monday night performance is fresh in the memory. It was, you know, City shouldn't. And you can't say that they weren't worried about that game, because they were. You could tell by the reaction to defeat that they were up for it. And also the comments from John Stones in the papers afterwards, in the papers the next day, that they really were targeting the quadruple. So it was a big defeat there, and it might take a bit of getting over. But Pep Guardiola's record, I've been doing a bit of research on your behalf in this game. Guardiola has never lost a cup final in 90 minutes, and he's been in enough of them. Arsenal played 2 League Cup finals under the French chump, and he's lost both. Better record than FA Cups, obviously, that's why he's still in the job. And I can understand why some might fancy 9-2 Arsenal in a one-off game, surely it's worth a bet. But I don't think it is. I think City are comfortably a better side. And despite what happened on Monday, you could argue, you know, I'm saying it might take some time to get over it. You could argue the opposite point of view. You know, they've got a lot to prove now. You know, they've got to get their season back on track. And I think Arsenal are such a beatable team right now.
Mm.
So, yeah, I'm going to go for City. 8-13 is giving absolutely nothing away. Absolutely nothing, but I can't see any other results.
No, it's not the most respectful price to Arsenal, but Arsenal have lost 5 League Cup finals in their history. That's more than any other club, which on the one hand, you're going, great, you're getting to finals, but you've got to go on to win them. Interestingly, Andy, last 6 meetings between the two teams in all competitions, both teams have scored. Can you see, you're an Arsenal fan, can you see Arsenal troubling Man City defensively? I mean, they're going to have the work cut out at the back, of course, but can they offer their own problems going forward?
There were a couple of stats I had, and you just nicked one of them. both teams scored in the last 6 games. That's shade of odds on here. So mm-hmm. That would seem to be a decent bet, because I think that could well happen again. Last 6 meetings, 1 win for Arsenal, 3 draws and 2 wins for City. So whilst on paper, on an every logical aspect you look at this, you'd think only one result. It actually is closer than that. So I wouldn't put people off a draw either at 14-5. And Arsenal's win in extra time is 20-1.
Mm.
And that's happened before.
Yeah.
And it can happen again.
It could go the distance, this one. It wouldn't surprise me at all, because often in cup finals as well, you get to the hour mark, and if it's still goalless or if teams are drawing,
yeah,
there's almost a willingness to just be a little bit cagey. And I know that goes against everything that Pep has been doing with Man City this season, where they have been relentless and scored a lot of late goals when they have needed them. But be interesting to see this.
If you did the latest Sky trick of trying to pick a composite team out of these two teams, well, guess what you're going to end up with? The whole Man City team. But
would you say none of the Arsenal team would get in? I'm just thinking I would say that none of the Arsenal team would get in. But as an Arsenal fan, wouldn't you argue for any of them?
I know you don't like Ozil, but I would always make an argument for him on his quality. And the other one is possibly Koscielny. Outside of that, no.
No, I wouldn't. I don't think I'd have any of them. Nacho Monreal, 10-1 to score any time. He keeps scoring. Play him up front.
He's a funny one. He's absolutely prolific at the moment, and he does make those runs into the box, and he always seems to be the one that everybody leaves alone. They're concentrating on other people and forget about him. He's not getting in City's time.
It's really interesting that you mentioned that, though, because just the fact that no Arsenal players would get into the City 11, does that not make the 8-13 really quite backable?
Well, that's what I say. If you look at it in a logical point of view, there's only one winner. But history tells you that isn't the case between these two teams. So I'm still giving Arsenal a bit of a squeak, but in extra time.
Okay. Best bet for you then, Derek?
Yeah, 8-13 City, they've got to win this. I think they've got to win this. As I say, Arsenal are so beatable. But I can understand why Andy's coming with that 20-1 Arsenal in extra time. That doesn't seem to be too big a price, that, doesn't it? I'm looking at the goal scorers. Sergio Aguero's odds on to score at any time against Arsenal. That's the chief insult to Arsenal, I think. But Kevin De Bruyne, every time you see him, he goes close three or four times in a game. He's 2-1 compared to Sterling at 13-10. I'd rather have De Bruyne any day at those odds.
And it may well be as well, if you are willing to put a short price acca together for the weekend, rather than taking City at 8-13, you could put City to lift the trophy at 4-11. Just give yourself that bit of insurance. It's backable enough for if you are putting 8-9 other selections in with it, I suppose, just in case that it is a fairly trappy final or it does go to extra time, but should be a cracker anyway on Sunday afternoon. Now we've got plenty of action coming up in Europe this weekend. Let's have a best bet.
This week's European nap comes from France with a game kicking off on Saturday afternoon. This one is a 4 o'clock kickoff. Toulouse are entertaining Monaco. It's 3-1 about Toulouse. The draw is 5-2. And Monaco are there at 10-11, which immediately looks a big price to my eye about Monaco. Not too often do we get the chance to back them at around even money. And they come into this one in good heart as well, having won their last four games in all competitions, including a 2-0 victory over Montpellier in the Coupe de Ligue. They've then won 3-2 against Lyon. They beat Angers 4-0 and beat Dijon by the same scoreline last time out. So all in all, it's 8 goals in the last 2 games in Ligue 1, and Monaco are arriving here in rampant nick. They haven't lost a game in Ligue 1 for a good while as well. You have to go back to November for their last defeat in the league. Toulouse arrive here in pretty average form, and they've slipped to 16th in the table. They're just 1 point away from the relegation zone, so Toulouse are in pretty poor form at present. Monaco will need the points here. They're looking to repel the challenge of Marseille and finish second in behind PSG. The title's long gone, but second place is still all to play for between those two. Monaco at 10-11 looks a good price this week, and they'll do for a European nap.
And of course there are plenty of other games in the Premier League going on this weekend. We've already touched on a few of them, Derek, as being slightly uninspiring. Was there anything else that jumped out at you of the Saturday 3 o'clock games?
Is that a kind way of looking for a nap, is it, off me?
Yeah, go on then.
Well, I'm going to go for, you're not going to be surprised here, well you are going to be surprised, West Brom. Odds on, bottom of the league, 5 points adrift, but they're 19-20 to beat Huddersfield, and they will.
Okay. I'd be in agreement with the selection, not the price. I see where you're coming from anyway.
He's after more love mail from Huddersfield again every week.
What's the nap for you, Andy?
Do you know what? I'm actually torn between two or three here. I like the Leicester -1. I'm also looking at Burnley-Southampton draw. I quite like that one. And I'm even tempted for the Arsenal extra time. So being as I've been on such a terrible run in the Naps table, I'm going to go for the massive price 20-1 to get me right back in the game. Arsenal to win in extra time.
Well, there you go. And for me, I will go with... I'm very tempted by Palace, but I'm going to play Burnley at 13-8 to win. Southampton are just so poor, and I can just see Burnley winning that 1-0. I'd probably have a bet on 1-0.
It's not going to be pretty, that game.
But I can't nap it. But Burnley at 13-8, probably the best bet for me. They've got to win eventually, surely, and they'll never have a better opportunity than against a pretty meek Saints side. Oh. delighted to say that Warren Horton now joins us on the line from The Sun. Good morning to you, Warren.
How are we doing? Good?
Very, very good. We've had an eventful week in terms of Champions League and FA Cup action. The FA Cup, of course, last weekend seems like ages ago since we were watching Spurs struggle at Rochdale, and then it looked like they were going through, and then all of a sudden, not the case. And then, of course, we saw Wigan dump Man City out on Monday night. It's all been going on, hasn't it, Warren?
Well, what's interesting was that I was actually in the office on Monday afternoon, and two of the guys said, "Oh, shall we go down the pub and watch Wigan play Man City?" And I thought, "Nah, no chance. It'd be 3 or 4 nil." Then you see what unfolds, and it was just an incredible game, an incredible performance. And just when you think everything's going to go a certain way, where Manchester City are going to sweep everyone before them, talk of a quadruple, Will Griggs comes up and scores that incredible goal and sends them out of the FA Cup. So, again, the FA Cup's been under so much scrutiny. It's been under so much pressure over the last 5, 10, 15 years, with so much emphasis and importance on qualifying for the Champions League. And nights like that, and what Rochdale and Newport have done to Spurs, have earned themselves replays at Wembley, to show you that there is still the magic of the FA Cup, and we can still keep believing it is a fantastic competition.
Is it the fact, Derek, that have Spurs just been a bit rubbish? Because they've played fairly strong teams against both Newport and Rochdale and been forced into a replay both times.
Well, yeah, and you look at Spurs' performance and you think, well, you know, it's a further evidence that it doesn't really matter, the competition to the big clubs. And then you see Manchester City on Monday, the way they reacted to losing. You know, the tunnel bust-ups, the on-the-pitch bust-ups, it mattered. It mattered a lot. And all credit to Wigan, a fantastic result. And you could argue that Wigan alone have given the FA Cup the kiss of life in the last few years. Monday's result, and then beating City in the Cup a couple of years ago in the final, of course. It needed it because the Saturday matches on last weekend, just kicking off with Sheffield Wednesday and Swansea, that boring 0-0 draw, and then three unremarkable games to follow. And then, you know, the Sunday and Monday were devastating. So it was sensational. So well done, Wigan.
Absolutely. And in terms of the draw for the quarters, again, the big four, if you like, or, well, I say the big four, it's a big three now, isn't it, have been kept apart. So Man U, Chelsea and Spurs, providing they get through against Rochdale, have all got fairly cosy ties, shall we say. And the other tie is Wigan against Southampton, who Southampton, you'd imagine, are going to be fully focused, Warren, on trying to stay up.
Yeah, they're in the bottom three. But again, Wigan will fancy their chance of playing against anyone. They'll feel if they can beat Manchester City at home, why can't we beat Southampton, regardless of where we're playing them? They'll really fancy their chances of actually getting to a Wembley semi-final. And you look at Manchester United as well, at home to Brighton, the perfect draw for them. So, as you said, all the big teams who are into the quarterfinals have been kept apart. So it's potentially a great draw for the Premier League sides. And it potentially as well, as I've just mentioned, the likes of Wigan possibly get into a semi-final. So great all round.
I'd be interested to hear your views, actually, Warren, on something that it seems to crop up every year, basically, which is, should the semi-finals be held at Wembley? Does that devalue the competition? There's been plenty of conjecture on Twitter over the last week or so, with people saying, oh, it's ridiculous, it shouldn't be the case. What are your views on it?
I'm a traditionist, I've got to admit. I'm, as a young kid growing up, watching Crystal Palace play Liverpool at Villa Park. Villa Park has always been an iconic ground for me as far as semi-finals are concerned. Old Trafford, we've had semi-finals at Spurs, White Hart Lane. I really believe, and I can understand why the FA are doing it, they need to generate money because of the huge expense the new Wembley costs. But still, for me, it's even been done like we did to another level now with Spurs playing their home games there as well. So I truly believe Wembley is something you aspire to. Wembley is something you earn in a cup final, and I think it should stay that way.
Derek, I'm sure you'll have a view.
Well, there's nobody in football, apart from the people who count the money at the FA, who think it's a good idea to have a semi-final there. It has devalued the competition. Everything they've done has devalued the competition. Changing the kickoff time, you know, putting it on the same weekend as Premier League games sometimes. It's just, you know, they've sabotaged the competition, and it's amazing that it's still in rude health, given Monday's evidence.
And it is, I mean, quite feasibly, you could have a semi-final that's Wigan against Manchester United, both hiking down to London for no apparent reason.
Exactly.
OK, well, that's the FA Cup sort of done and dusted for now, and we'll put that to the back of our minds for, about a week until the replays, of course. The Champions League, we had on last midweek and also this midweek, and two very different tales, if you like, with Liverpool and Man City absolutely cruising, and Man U and Chelsea with draws, Derek. I suppose they can look at both of them and go, well, we're still in both ties. Man United, probably the happier of the two with their point. Chelsea played well up to a point against Barca, but they really could have done without conceding that goal, couldn't they?
Well, it could. But what it showed to me the last week or so of Champions League games is that there isn't an outstanding team in this competition. I was very disappointed with Barcelona against Chelsea. I know the TV pundits waxed lyrical about Lionel Messi, as they always do, but I've never seen him so ineffective. Barca looked very, very ordinary, and Chelsea could easily have won, and probably deservedly so. Yeah, they played defensively, but you know, you do that against Barcelona. United were a disgrace yet again in midweek. They're going to a bog-standard Champions League club and looking for a 0-0 draw. And a 0-0 draw, and I keep saying this, no one seems to believe me, when you get a 0-0 draw at this stage of the competition, it suits the team at home. It suits Seville more than Man United. All they have to do is score a goal at Old Trafford, and United are in real difficulties. And by the way, Seville are still 150-1. I mentioned them last week. They were 150-1 last week. They've got a great result, Seville, there. That's a great result for them, and they're still 150-1. Now, I'm arguing that in a competition, when unless Bayern Munich are unbelievable, I haven't seen that much of them this season, this is wide open, and that is a great bet. Man United are 20-1. Sevilla are 150-1. You tell me on the evidence of Wednesday, which is the better bet?
No, fair enough. I mean, you look at the betting, and the three rags, if you like, Besiktas, Basel and Porto, there's a reason for that. They got absolutely humped in the first leg. But
exactly.
Sevilla 150 is still very much in it. Shakhtar at 80s as well. I mean, they could well go through. And yeah, I see your point, actually. Not bad at all. Wise words from Derek McGovern there.
You never thought you'd get that.
Who'd have thought it? We didn't mention Tottenham there, Warren, who, of course, got a great draw away at Juventus. I say a great draw. Great given the context of the first 15 minutes of that game. Obviously, we've already touched on Spurs in this podcast, but they could really make a good fist of trying to get at Juve in the second leg. And they're 14-1 to lift the trophy.
I think that's a decent bet, to be honest with you. I'm not a huge gambling man, but I'll leave that to Derek, the expert. But I still think that's a pretty decent bet. We saw what happened with Spurs in the first leg, 2-0 down, thinking, goodness me, where do we go from here? But it just shows the mental fortitude, the strength and the actual ability that Spurs have. And for me, they've taken their game up in Europe another level. We saw what happened with them over the few years under Harry Redknapp. They've grown in stature in Europe, as far as I'm concerned, and they're a team to be really, really feared. Once that attack's going, I think they're good defensively. They're a very, very cohesive unit, and they're never out of games. And that proved what happened in Juventus. Got those two vital away goals. Derek mentioned away goals earlier with Manchester United, and I completely agree with him. I thought it was an okay performance, but you've got to get an away goal, and the Spurs have got two, and I think they're real favourites to go through to the next round.
Who do you think will win the Champions League this year, Warren?
I think I wouldn't discount Real Madrid. Look at the performance they put in against PSG. I thought that was a performance that showed a team with real class and real pedigree. I still think Real Madrid will probably get through in that tie. I think for myself, it's a toss-up I think the three teams to beat are Real Madrid, Barcelona and Manchester City. I think the winner will come from one of those three.
Interesting that we've got Man City as favourites at threes, Barca fours, Bayern 9-2 and Real Madrid 11-2. Not often, Derek, that Real Madrid will be fourth favourites of the Champions League at this stage.
No, but they're not the fourth they were now. The two big Spanish clubs are the fourth they were. It's a new era upon us, and it's wide open for an English team to take it, isn't it? You know, one of the English teams could easily do it. One of them, except Man United, they ain't going to be doing it.
Could we see United kind of boring and stifling their way to the Champions League like Mourinho did with Inter Milan all those years ago?
Yeah, you know, that's probably what he's aiming for, but teams like that don't win the big competitions anymore, do they? I think that era is over now. I might be wrong. You know, that's probably what his ploy is. But God, it'll be a sad day for football if we win playing like that.
I agree. I agree with you guys. I don't think a 0-0 result with Seville weren't that great as far as I'm concerned. I thought if United got out of second gear, they could have got one or two goals. But for some reason, the handbrake's on. And if you're a Manchester United fan, with all the talent they've got, that's got to be a concern.
Mm. Okay. Well, we're going to go from talking of Champions League to potentially talking about the Championship. And we're going to focus on West Brom and what's really going on at the Hawthorns. I'll just give you the relegation markets. West Brom, as we record this, are threes on to go down. Huddersfield and Stoke are 5-6. Swansea 2-1. It's 11-4 for Brighton and Palace. Threes. 7-2 Newcastle. Southampton 4-1. And nines and bigger the rest of them. West Brom then. Derek, we'll start with you here. Because we haven't had a chance to catch up, have we, since their little trip away to Barcelona, which went really well for everybody, didn't it?
Yeah. You know, funnily enough, it came out in the newspapers that cab's theft. But the players tried to take out an injunction to suppress the news, I heard. They didn't want people finding out they played for West Brom. It didn't work. I mean, I'm surprised there was only four of them.
Sorry. I'm surprised that was good.
Four of them. They've usually had 11 passengers this season. At least if they go down this season, they'll be able to take the quickest route. It was a shocking display by them. You've had enough shocking displays by them on the pitch. But what was significant about that, though, is it was senior players, players that you'd think would know better, wouldn't you? You know, the Gareth Barrys and that, they've been around. And it does hint at something badly wrong at the club when players of that stature, of that experience, are pulling stunts like that.
Yeah, you touched on it there, Derek. But Warren, the squeaky clean Gareth Barry. I mean, what on earth has Alan Pardew been doing to him to make him into this taxi-stealing monster?
Ooh, that's a bit harsh. That's probably the quickest Gareth Barry's moved all season when he was in that taxi. I thought I'd try and get my own gag in there, guys. Sorry, I couldn't resist. But it's been a mess. It's been an absolute mess. You've seen what's happened to the club as well since Alan Pardew's come in. Hoping for that sort of classic old-school new manager bounce, and it just simply hasn't happened. I think he just won one league win, that really poor showing against Southampton last week. What's gone on in Barcelona? And, you know, Gutiérrez Live, the owner, he's already got rid of John Williams, Martin Goodman as well. They've both gone due to poor results on the pitch. And if those guys are going due to poor results on the pitch, there's only one thing next, and that's Alan Pardew going. And I wouldn't be surprised if they don't beat Huddersfield on Saturday. I wouldn't be surprised if he's sacked.
Yeah, there's been talk of if they have a heavy defeat against Huddersfield. But to be fair, Derek, you'd think any defeat against Huddersfield at this stage of the season, it's going to be curtains for West Brom anyway. Would there be any point in getting rid of Pardew, or would it stop the rot, maybe?
Who would they get if they sacked him at this stage of the season? They've been turned down so often. Their second kit is a duvet now, West Brom. I mean, I can see them coming back. You see, I've seen West Brom a couple of times this season, and I'm amazed they're as far adrift at the bottom as they are. They're 7 points behind Huddersfield. Now, if Huddersfield played West Brom on a neutral at Wembley, say, this weekend, and it was, you know, take your pick, I'd be back in West Brom all day. Mm. I'm still concede West Brom are a far better side than Huddersfield, and I think this is a great fixture for them. Yeah, it's curtains for them if you lose. If you lose this, they're down and out, but they won't lose it. They'll beat Huddersfield this weekend.
Okay. Interesting. Got a few markets on the William Hill website. Pardew 5-4 to be the next manager to leave, which certainly looks okay. I suppose the only thing that could scupper you there is Antonio Conte at 5-2, but unlikely that he'd go, especially with the Champions League tie in the balance, or at least not right now anyway. And Pellegrino is 3-1, I think, as well, to be the next one out. But certainly a bit of value there. And on the William Hill website, there's some specials markets. The hashtag Your Odds. West Brom to be relegated and then promoted next season. Available at 7-2. Not the biggest price, but there are plenty of specials on there if you want to get your teeth stuck into them. I just think, I'm with you, Derek. I think they'll win at the weekend. And then all of a sudden you go, oh, well, hang on, they're not adrift anymore now. And could they then go on to potentially haul themselves out of things? We've already seen it, Warren, with Swansea, haven't we? That they were adrift, and now all of a sudden they're 2-1 to go down and looking like they've found a real new lease of life.
I think the difference is with what Swansea are doing under Carlos Carvajal is that they're actually going for games. They're actually putting two strikers on. They're actually looking like scoring goals. Yes, you look at West Bromwich Albion. I think if I'm looking at the table now, is it 19 Premier League goals they've scored all season?
21. Yeah.
I'm sorry. And actually, Swansea, ironically, have actually scored, I think, one less now. Yeah. But they're starting to score goals. And it's not just the fact they're scoring goals. It's because they're actually on the front foot trying to win games. They're winning games late. They're getting late goals. And I think that's the difference. Solomon Rondon's their top scorer, West Brom, with 4 goals. I think that tells its own story. And poor old Daniel Sturridge has gone there to get games, get himself back in the England frame, and it's gone wrong for him with that injury. So they're not scoring enough goals. They're okay defensively, but to keep asking your defence to keep clean sheets every week, especially when you're at the bottom, that's a huge ask for them.
Okay. I want a definitive 3 from all of you. Who's going to go down? Who do you think? Start with you, Warren.
I'm going for West Brom. I'm going to go for Southampton. And I'm going to... I think Huddersfield are going to get dragged in.
Okay. Big win for them, wasn't it, last week against Bournemouth? But again, they're still only 1 point clear of Southampton, who are currently in 18th. What about you, Derek?
I think Huddersfield are absolute bankers to go down. I've still got a feeling West Brom will get out of it. I'm going to go for Huddersfield, Stoke, who was saddled with a lame duck manager. And I fear for Palace without Zaha. If he doesn't come back in, I'm looking at Palace and I'm thinking they're in trouble. So I still think they'll come down as well. I know West Brom got a big gap, 7 points to make up on Palace, but I still think it's within their compass. So yeah, they're my 3.
Okay. Interesting you mentioned Palace without Zaha. They've got a dreadful record without him. The last time that they won a game without him was in September 2016.
Jeez.
Of course, he is out for... Well, they're hoping he'll be back for the running. And, of course, they've got some dreadful games coming up, but you can almost...
I don't think he's out for that long. I think it's about a month, I think. So
okay.
Hopefully, if you're a Palace fan, the likes of Andros Townsend and Kabaye will step up and actually show that sort of creative spark to give Christian Benteke a little bit of support to score some goals. But I think Palace will just about have enough, I think.
It's interesting, because we record this, obviously, on a Thursday. It could well be that by Monday... we've completely changed all 3, because it's changing so much down there at the minute. There's so few points separating all of them. I mean, Watford looked like they were on the slide a few weeks ago, and now they're looking, well, they're sitting quite pretty on 30 points, I suppose. And it's just one of those seasons, isn't it? But anyway, Warren, thank you very much for joining us. And the same to you, Mr. McGovern.
No problem.
And we'll now hand over for some bets in the Championship.
You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
Hi, my name is Pete Varies, and for my nap this week on the podcast, I'm going to go close to home and take Middlesbrough at 11-10 to win away at Sunderland. Yes, this is a local derby, and derbies can throw up all kinds of odd results, but it would be very, very odd for Sunderland to beat Middlesbrough, wouldn't it? In terms of their Championship form, Sunderland really, really suffering, have won just once this year. And quite frankly, they look like a side plummeting down to League One football. Yes, Middlesbrough have lost their last two away from home without scoring, but that was at Norwich and at Cardiff, two sides infinitely better than their opponents this weekend. And on top of that, Middlesbrough have in fact won, if you're a head-to-head punter, the last 5 meetings back-to-back against Sunderland. 11-10 for me looks very, very fair on Middlesbrough, and improving Middlesbrough to beat Sunderland, a side who are plummeting and really plummeting fast. So 11-10 Borough for me. Let's head to Gav Puszalowski and get his thoughts on League One.
My nap selection this weekend is all about a side who are fast becoming the story of League One this season. It's all about Plymouth at home to Bradford at 7-5 to beat the Bantams. I am on Plymouth as my nap selection. Go back to the 1st of December 2017. Bradford were 5th, Plymouth were 24th. Plymouth were 19 points behind Bradford City. Fast forward to this weekend, Plymouth are 7th, Bradford City are 8th. Both teams have 50 points, Plymouth are ahead on goal difference. The rise of Plymouth Argyle is absolutely phenomenal. Plymouth at home won their opening game of the season at home to Charlton in August. They had to wait till November to win their second game of the season at home, and since then, at home, have won 7 in 8. Bradford have fallen, Bradford have had to change management, Plymouth absolutely flying high, and if they win, they could be in the playoffs. Unbelievable, given the fact that at the start of December, they were bottom of the table. Plymouth, my nap selection, at 7-5 to beat Bradford. Looking at League 2, Here's Al Ross.
A four-game winning streak came to an end last week. Barnett, of all teams tripping us up on the pod, fear not, because a new week brings new prices and an old friend, Swindon away. I'm almost sick of giving this stat, almost, but not quite. 10 wins in 17 away league games is quite simply the best away form in this league by some distance. So why are they odds against 6-5 at second bottom Chesterfield, whose form is just terrible? Well, put simply, Swindon have had it tough lately. After a run of 5 wins in 6, it's now just 2 wins in 5, but it's always worth asking yourself why that is. The answer, the teams they have failed to beat recently are the teams in 2nd, 3rd and 8th. And frankly, a 2-2 draw at 8th placed Lincoln isn't bad when you're playing with 10 men for 70 minutes. By contrast, Chesterfield's last 4 were against teams in 15th, 9th, 13th and 12th. 3 of those were at home as well, and they lost all 4. Taking the lead 3 times across those games, yet chipping 8 goals in total and winning 0 points. It's getting to that part of the season where you hear tired pundits reaching for the old cliche, the table doesn't lie. Well, if that's true, it means that 6th placed Swindon are above and therefore better than all of those teams who have won at the Pro Act recently. With 7 goals in 7 games, January signing Mark Richards is worth backing to score in a Swindon win at a huge 21-10, but as always, the Knapp is the outright, and it's away day specialist Swindon at 6-5.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.